We would now like to turn the call over to Matt Gintner with Vice President of Investor Relations for 3M.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our third quarter 2009 business review. Joining me on today's call are George Buckley, 3M Chairman, President, and Chief Executive Officer, and Pat Campbell, our Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. Today's call will summarize our financial results for the third quarter. A PowerPoint presentation will accompany today's conference call, which you can access on 3M's Investor Relations website at 3M.com. Today's slide presentation and the audio replay will be archived on our website for an extended period of time for your convenience. As I mentioned last quarter, our next investor meeting is scheduled for December 8 from 8 a.m. to approximately noon at the Grand Hyatt Hotel in New York City. We sent out an invitation earlier this month, and many of you have already RSVP'd. If you have not responded to date, please do so. And if you did not receive the invitation, please contact my office, and we'll get one out to you right away. Before we begin today, please take a moment to read the forward-looking statement on slide 2. During today's conference call, we will make certain predictive statements that reflect our current views about our future performance and financial results. These statements are based on certain assumptions and expectations of future events that are subject to risks and uncertainties. Item 1A of our most recent Form 10-K and 10-Q lists some of the most important risk factors that could cause actual results to differ from our predictions. So let's begin today's review. Please turn to slide number 3, and I will turn the program over to George.
Thank you, Matt. Good morning, everybody, and thank you very much for listening to our third quarter call. For 3M, the third quarter was marked by continued execution of our plan, tight control of spending, while retaining the sharp focus we've had on cash generation, as we simultaneously drove sales and market share everywhere that we could. I could almost give you my second quarter remarks here again, because Q3 was really all about continued execution of the plan rather than any radical new pathway or strategy. So while we significantly overachieved relative to external expectations, and we're certainly hugely encouraged by our progress there, do please keep in mind that organic sales volumes are down 7.1% year over year. Sequentially, however, third quarter sales increased by an impressive 8.3% over Q2. And as I've mentioned last quarter, the second derivative of sales with respect to time also continues to improve. We remain encouraged by our ability to operate well and to maintain good margins and generate huge amounts of cash in these times. And I confess that the rate of sequential growth is surprisingly pleasant. We achieved a free cash flow conversion of 163% this quarter and 145% year to date. So there's no question that it was a strong quarter delivered by hard slog by the good people of 3M. Pat will detail the quarter for you in a moment, including several factors which helped us again. And for example, demand for optical films continued strong, as it did in Q2, especially films for LCD TVs. We also achieved good growth in renewable energy, healthcare, automotive aftermarket, and aerospace, to name but a few. As you would have expected, demand for respiratory products used to help prevent the spread of H1N1 virus remains strong. So we're investing an additional $20 million or so over and above the $20 million I told you about last quarter to add yet more flexible capacity to our respirator lineup, this time in Singapore. We will probably also add a small top-up capacity here in the United States that will cost about another $5 million. This is in addition to the recent capacity adds that we made in the United Kingdom. Preferential purchasing of eco TVs versus other alternatives and related electronic products has been strong and will probably remain good in the foreseeable future. Obviously, sell-through at Christmas will be the determining factor on Q1 and Q2 optical film demand. Gross margin and inventory improvements show that our control of our factories remains absolutely superb. Raw material costs and solid price carryover from last year have also helped. While it may not be quite so positive next year, at this stage of our planning, we don't expect to see wholesale changes in impact. Our approach on these factors, by the way, is always to manage the price-inflation gap. We therefore remain committed to our operating and financial plan, which obviously again helped us greatly in the third quarter. as we expected the cost reductions from recent restructuring and our other actions gained further traction in the quarter, and we anticipate those benefits continuing through the rest of the year and on into 2010. It's easy to forget how tough it's been this past 12 months and to reflect on the huge changes that have occurred in banking, manufacturing, automotive, retail, and the nation's balance sheet. The downturn has been a vicious lesson for all of us, but I cannot say enough about how well 3M people have responded. We do appear to be gaining share in many places, but with such volatile swings in demand, you can imagine that it's hard to know accurately how much. Regardless, the trick we need to pull off will be keeping it when things return to normal, if and when they return to normal, and certainly to continue this progress well into 2010. In short, the 3M team is really executing well, and our plan remains the right one for the times. And I'll address the outlook after Pat's comments, so I'll turn the call over now to Pat.
Thanks, George, and good morning, everyone. Please turn to slide number 4. Third quarter GAAP reported earnings were $1.35 per share versus last year's $1.41 per share. Excluding special items, this quarter's earnings were $1.37 per share, which was slightly below last year's $1.42 and above our internal expectations entering the quarter. As most of you know, we've been aggressively restructuring the company since early last year, and we continue this effort in the most recent quarter. We announced the reduction of approximately 200 positions in Q3, with the majority of those occurring in Western Europe and, to a lesser extent, here in the United States. The related pre-tax net restructuring charge totaled $26 million in the quarter, or about 2 cents per share. Next, I will recap the third quarter sales growth. Please turn to slide 5. There are some encouraging data points in our third quarter sales figure, but to be clear, we are still operating in a weak and uncertain economy, even if the recession has been determined to be technically over. First, sales to the consumer electronics industry remain good, coming off an improved second quarter, with particularly good results in our optical film business. Secondly, demand remains strong for respiratory protection products due to the outbreak of the H1N1 virus. We are the global leader in disposable respirators with market share and capacity that far outpaces our nearest competitor. Our respiratory factories have been running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, since May of this year to keep up with demand, but we have been unable to significantly reduce our backorder volume levels. The good news on sales was not limited to these two markets. In fact, we posted sequential sales improvements in each of our 6 business segments in the third quarter, with electrical communications, display and graphics, and industrial transportation all increasing double digits. On a global basis, sales grew sequentially in all major geographic regions. On a worldwide basis, sales declined 5.6%, a substantial improvement from the 15% decline we posted in Q2 and the 21% decline in Q1. So the business continues to improve quarter by quarter. Organic sales volumes were down 7.1% year on year, which was a bit better than our expectation entering the quarter of a negative 8 to a negative 13%, and also better than the latest Global Insight estimate for worldwide IPI of 8.5%. Demand decline in many major industries appear to have bottomed at this point, and inventory reductions have either waned or expected to do so in the fourth quarter or early in 2010. So our sales growth should continue to equal or exceed IPI for the immediate future. Selling prices remain positive, rising 2% year on year, and acquisitions added an additional 1.8 percentage points to growth. Finally, currency impacts reduced third quarter sales by 2.3%. Sales in local currency declined 3.3% year on year, including acquisitions. Local currency sales rose by 5.5% in display and graphics and 4.7% in our healthcare segment, but declined by 2% in safety, security, and protection services, 4.8% in consumer and office, 6.4% in industrial and transportation, and 15.3% in electrical communications. Looking at this year's sales change by geographic region, organic volumes turned positive in Asia Pacific at a plus 2.6%. The first such increase in this region since the first quarter of 2008. Organic volumes in Europe declined 7.9% as positive growth in safety, security, and protection services related to H1N1 demand and healthcare was more than offset by declines in the other four segments. U.S. organic volumes were down 12.4%, and the combined Latin America-Canada region declined 9% versus last year's third quarter. There was no surprise in our selling price performance this quarter. Selling prices increased year-on-year in all regions with the exception of Asia-Pacific, where prices typically decline year-on-year due to the heavy mix of consumer electronics. Prices rose 10% in the combined Latin America and Canada region, largely due to currency, as we routinely raise prices in Latin America when the value of these currencies fall against the U.S. dollar. Now please turn to slide 6, where I will review key elements of the third quarter income statement. For the second quarter, we posted very strong and improving operating margins, with this quarter coming in at 24.3%. So our ongoing and intense focus on operational excellence continues to deliver strong results despite these tough economic conditions. Third quarter gross margin improved 110 basis points to 49.2%, a very good result considering year-on-year volume declines. Selling prices increase of 2% also helped, adding over a full point of gross margin. Finally, raw materials were again positive versus the prior year, declining about 3% in Q3. We have aggressively reduced structural manufacturing costs in many of our businesses over the past year to help mitigate lower production levels, and these actions are really paying off. As a percent of sales, third quarter SG&A and R&D spending were both in line with the prior year. As has been the case throughout 2009, we are maintaining firm control over our discretionary spending, particularly as it relates to back office activities, while doing all we can to maintain our investments in key growth programs. Also recall that we changed our policy on employee vacation use, which also reduced year-on-year SG&A costs. In short, employees with previously banked vacations are required to use it up during 2009 and 2010. This effectively reduces the bank vacation accrual and lowers the expense in the income statement. Operating income was $1.5 billion, right in line with last year, and as I mentioned, operating margins were 24.3%. Net interest expense increased $23 million, driven primarily by lower yields on cash deposits. The tax rate for the third quarter was in line with our expectation at 32.2%. We were expecting some variability in the quarterly rate during the second half of 2009 due to the resolution of several years of tax audits. We continue to expect that our tax rate for the full year will be between 30.5% and 31%. Net income was just under $1 billion for the quarter, which was right in line with last year's results. As I mentioned, ahead of our prior expectations due to slightly improved market conditions, a more favorable currency, and continued strong cost discipline. As I have discussed with many of you in the past few quarters, year-on-year comps are important, but in this environment, it is equally important to look at the business results sequentially. Please turn to slide 7. Sales increased almost a half a billion dollars versus the second quarter, virtually all due to volume. All six business segments and all geographies posted sequential sales growth as economies around the world continued to improve. Sequential sales growth was led by electric communications at 12.1%, display and graphics at 10.8%, and industrial and transportation at 10.1%. And on a geographic basis, sequential sales growth was strongest in Asia Pacific, driven by our optical films and industrial-related businesses. In the sales and marketing area, we typically accelerate advertising and promotion efforts in the back half of the year to support our customers' promotional programs during the back-to-school and holiday seasons, and this year is no different. Third quarter advertising and merchandising spending, for example, was up 14% sequentially, which we fully expect to drive growth once end market conditions improve. Investments in R&D increased by $29 million sequentially, an increase of nearly 10%, primarily impacted by some specific one-off technology investments made in our oral care business during Q3. We continue to maintain investments in other high-growth businesses such as renewable energy, and water purification, just to name a few. Finally, we expanded operating margin or operating income by 16.4% sequentially, with incremental leverage of 45%. Margins improved by 1.7 percentage points to 24.3%. Please turn to slide 8, where I will recap a few balance sheet and cash flow highlights for the quarter. Heading into 2009, in the face of such a significant economic collapse, we set very aggressive cash flow targets for each of our businesses, and our leaders and their teams have responded with great results. Third quarter free cash flow was $1.6 billion, up $769 million versus last year's third quarter. This represents a 97% year-on-year increase. The improvement was driven by many factors, but most notably by lower capital expenditures, improving net working capital, lower cash tax payments, and also reduced cash pension contributions. Net working capital declined by $415 million year-on-year, with inventory down $443 million and accounts receivable down $125 million. Inventories again were a bright spot as we drove a 0.4-turn improvement versus September 2008 levels. A very good result considering the third quarter organic volumes declined by over 7%. Third quarter free cash flow conversion was 163%. Year-to-date cash flow increased 36%, and we converted 145% of net income. Net debt was $1.7 billion at September month end, a reduction of $1.1 billion from June levels, and one half of the level that we had September last year. Looking to the fourth quarter, our cash conversion rate will decline and likely be less than 100%, as we will be making some additional cash pension contributions. But for the full year 2009, we expect that the free cash flow conversion will remain in excess of 100%. We paid $361 million in dividends to common shareholders in the third quarter, and consistent with recent quarters, our share buyback program remained on hold. Overall, our balance sheet is very healthy and continues to improve. The majority of our long-term debt balance does not mature until 2011 or later, and we have very good access to capital. We are well positioned to fund organic growth investments and also take advantage of acquisition opportunities as they surface. Again, our first priority is to grow the business while maintaining our premium credit rating. So that wraps up the balance sheet and cash flow. So let's quickly review the performance of our business units. Please turn to slide number 9. For several quarters running, our healthcare business has generated strong results despite a tough economy. In this quarter, they delivered more of the same. These end markets generally grow faster and are more stable than many of our industrial and electronics markets. So this business is a great stabilizing factor in our portfolio. Third quarter sales in healthcare were $1.1 billion, up 4.7% in local currency terms. Currency reduced third quarter sales by 3.1%. It was encouraging to see very broad-based year-on-year growth in healthcare's third quarter results. Local currency sales expanded at a double-digit rate in infection prevention products and a mid-single-digit clip in the skin and wound care area. In addition, oral care, food safety, and health information service businesses drove positive local currency sales growth in the third quarter. Sales in the drug delivery systems declined by 5% in local currency terms as this business continues to work through challenging comparisons coming off of a very strong 2008. On a geographic basis, all regions posted positive local currency sales growth in healthcare, led by Asia Pacific and Latin America. Operating profit was $340 million, an increase of 12%, and margins were 31.5%. Sales mix continues to be a positive factor on margins in this business, and of course, the healthcare leadership team continues to drive outstanding productivity. What is perhaps most impressive about these results is that we are simultaneously and aggressively investing in expanding our healthcare business for the future. For example, we are funding important R&D efforts in oral care, such as digital dentistry and mini implants. And also, our drug delivery systems business recently announced the opening of a new laboratory site in Singapore. This lab will develop products in both inhalation and transdermal drug delivery solutions and will serve pharma customers and patients throughout the Asia Pacific region. The investment in this new lab complements our already well-established lab network with sites in both the United States and the UK. Similar investment examples exist elsewhere in the healthcare portfolio, and new product momentum just continues to get better. Please turn to slide 10 for quarterly details of our consumer and office business. Our consumer and office team posted very good third quarter results in the face of continued tough economic headwinds. Quarterly sales were $923 million, operating income was $227 million, and margins continued to improve. Remember that margins in consumer and office tend to peak in the third quarter of each year, driven by seasonally high sales and factory throughput. Total sales declined 6.6% in consumer and office, with almost 2% of the decline attributed to the stronger U.S. dollar. Organic sales declined 7.6%, which was partially offset by nearly 3 points of acquired growth in the quarter. Also, recall last quarter that we mentioned that we saw earlier than expected back-to-school orders begin in late June as retailers attempted to drive more customers to their stores earlier. We estimate that this earlier ordering negatively impacted year-on-year sales growth by approximately 2% versus last year's third quarter. On the organic front, our businesses are doing a great job of driving a steady flow of new products and aggressively driving penetration in order to combat a number of tough headwinds at the moment. Overall, weak consumer spending and a mixed back-to-school season really hurt our customers in the mass retail channel. In addition, slow housing starts and poor existing home sales impacted our do-it-yourself channel. And finally, high unemployment levels amongst white-collar workers remains a challenge in the office, retail, and wholesale channels. Regardless, we continue to drive innovation to promote more growth. For example, Filtreat, our leading family of filters for forced air heating systems in homes and buildings, continues to gain additional distribution. You may have also noticed that we ramped up our advertising during Q3 for many of our products, including Filtreat, as well as our new label product line. Local currency sales grew year-on-year in both our home care business and in consumer health care, where growth was boosted by two recent acquisitions. The first was Futuro, a leading supplier of braces, supports, and compression hosiery, and the second was Ace Brands, an iconic branded business we purchased from Becton Dickinson in July of this year. These deals, when combined with our existing organically grown product portfolio, are helping us to drive additional growth, particularly in the retail drug store channels. On a regional basis, sales in the local currencies increased in both Latin America and in Asia Pacific, while sales declined in the United States and Europe. All in all, the story in consumer office was fairly similar to recent quarters. Despite the challenging market conditions, our leaders in the consumer office business continue to deliver very fine results. Now let's review the display and graphics business, so please turn to slide 11. Display and graphics had a good third quarter. Sales were $896 million, up 5.5% in local currency, including 2.5 points of growth from acquisitions. Currency impacts reduced sales by 1%. So on a total dollar sales basis, sales improved by 4.5% year on year. Operating profits rose 12% to $204 million. In our optical film business, the positive momentum that began in the second quarter continued right into the third. Two factors are positively impacting results in this business. First, there's been a noticeable pickup in demand for flat panel televisions, coming off of aggressive inventory declines in late 2008 and the first quarter of 2009. And our films are an important performance enabler for those high-demanding electronic devices. Second, we're driving outstanding new product momentum in optical films as well. Recent 3M film technology breakthroughs effectively improve the energy efficiency of LCD panels. Put simply, 3M multi-layer optical films can fundamentally alter the design of a flat panel device by requiring fewer light bulbs in the back panel of an LCD screen. Sales of these products began to pick up in the second quarter, and that momentum accelerated further into the third quarter. Third quarter sales in optical systems increased 26% versus last year's third quarter, and were up 27% sequentially. Optical will remain an intensively competitive business going forward, and our OEM customers will continue to aggressively drive cost reductions. Selling price pressure will remain intense. Therefore, we must respond with aggressive cost reduction and productivity improvements. Importantly, this productivity will enable our ongoing R&D investment in optical, as our customers will continue to demand technical solutions to solve their ongoing problems. And we will be there, obviously, to help them. Moving to traffic safety systems, local currency sales rose at a mid-single-digit rate in the quarter. Acquisitions were the primary factors for this growth, namely our December 2000 acquisition of Fab Fabricato, a leading manufacturer of French license plates. On an organic basis, sales declined year-on-year as governments and municipalities are facing difficult budget conditions. Unfortunately, the highly anticipated U.S. fiscal stimulus bill has not helped the highway construction industry as much as we had hoped. While sales in commercial graphics were down year-on-year, we did see modest sequential sales improvement as the advertising market slowly recovered from the recession. Now please turn to slide 12, where I will review our safety, security, and protection services business. Sales in this business were $864 million in the quarter, down 6.1% year-on-year. Sales declined 2% in local currency, and currency impacts reduced sales by 4.1%. Despite these sales declines, profits rose an impressive 10% to $236 million. In the face of economic uncertainty, we kept a very close watch on expenses in the third quarter, and our factories ran very efficiently. As was the case in the second quarter, there were some very positive sales influences in the business in the third quarter, as well as some challenges. Certainly, the ongoing weak industrial and housing markets remained a drag on sales in many areas such as corrosion protection, roofing granules, commercial cleaning supplies, and manufacturing-related sales of personal protection equipment. This was no surprise to us. At the same time, the surge in orders for 3M's leading respiratory protection solutions that began in the second quarter continued right on through the third. This was directly related to the outbreak of the H1N1 virus, and we estimate that the X factor added an incremental $80 million to third quarter sales in our SS&PS business. Considering H1N1 related sales in other 3M businesses such as healthcare and consumer, the number was probably closer to $100 million. Our factories have been running flat out since May of this year to keep up with demand, and we see back orders well beyond the end of the year. As a matter of fact, we recently approved two new manufacturing investments to produce respirators in Singapore and to add some more capacity in the U.S., which George mentioned. Please turn to slide number 13 for a look at our largest business, industrial and transportation. As many of you know, if there's one business at 3M that is most correlated with general industrial production, this is it. So the leadership team here has to stay on top of their game day in and day out, and their track record in terms of profitability and return on capital is one of the absolute best amongst large industrial companies. This most recent quarter was no exception. Industrial transportation generated $403 million of operating profit in the third quarter, and margins were an impressive 21.2%, despite sales declines of 8.6%. On a sequential basis, the results were very encouraging. Sales and profits rose 10% and 23% respectively, and incremental margins topped 40% as factory utilization continued to improve and we are leveraging a much reduced structural manufacturing cost base. Consistent with what we saw in the second quarter, it appears that general industrial activity is stabilizing and showing a slight upward trend. In fact, most every division within industrial and transportation posted a positive sequential sales growth, with the strongest growth in automotive OEM and in the industrial tapes and adhesives. On a year-over-year basis, we drove positive local currency growth in a number of industrial and transportation businesses, led by renewable energy, automotive aftermarket, and aerospace and aircraft maintenance. Not surprisingly, local currency sales declined year-on-year in those businesses supporting a number of large industrial markets, such as automotive OEM, appliances, and the like. Industrial transportation has introduced an impressive array of game-changing new products resulting from R&D investments made over the last 3 to 4 years. in the tapes area. We launched new products that protect windows from permanent graffiti damage on buses, trains, and other transit areas. We have also introduced a number of tapes that bond and seal solar panels. In our energy and advanced materials business, we continue to bring value to customers through unique glass microspheres and improve insulation and buoyancy properties in the deep sea oil and gas industries. And finally, our abrasive business recently introduced a revolutionary ceramic mineral adhesive technology that has the ability to remove metal more quickly and generate less heat while sanding, resulting in a longer-lasting abrasive product. Early indications from customers have been very, very positive. Investments such as these in our core technologies and in exciting new growth markets, supported by outstanding operational discipline, remain fundamental to industrial transportation's continued success. Please turn to slide 14, where I will summarize results for our electro and communications business. Throughout 2009, end market declines have been most severe in this business, particularly in telecommunications and in commercial construction. So the year-on-year comps remain very challenging. Sales were $617 million in the third quarter, down 16.5% year-on-year, and operating profits declined 26% to $117 million. Local currency sales declines were fairly broad-based, declining 15.3% in aggregate, and currency impact reduced sales by just under a point. Faced with such difficult end market conditions, the electrocommunications team remains focused on driving operational efficiency and cost reductions, as evidenced by their nearly 20% operating margin in the quarter. Despite the obvious end market challenges, there is a ray of hope here. Sequential trends were favorable for the second consecutive quarter, as sales and profits rose 12% and 59% respectively in the third quarter, led by our consumer electronics-related businesses that sell high-tech products and solutions into the smartphones, mobile handheld, hard disk drive, and semiconductor markets. Similar to industrial and transportation, things are stabilizing in electro and communications as well. That concludes my review of our third quarter numbers. Now I will turn it back to George, who will just describe our outlook for the rest of the year. George?
Thank you very much, Pat. Before we get to your questions, I'd like to address our outlook for the rest of the year. We're certainly glad for the positive sales outcome this quarter, but we all know that the hardest time to forecast sales accurately is at turning points in demand. That is where there are inflection points for significant changes, or even in some cases, reversals in gradient. As we might say, changes in the first derivative. You recall that we said last quarter that the US economy, or at least those collective segments where 3M plays, seems to have reached bottom at the end of the second quarter, so that's where you see the changes of gradient. So to be fair to everyone, I don't think forecasting is going to get much easier anytime soon, and I hope you'll bear with us as we try to identify the underlying trends and patterns that will help us get better insight into where the world economy is going. I think 3M's capability at execution in difficult times is now beyond anybody's reasonable doubt. So the continued $64,000 question on everybody's mind is, where is the economy going? And whenever I get excited about our progress, and we've seen huge progress in new products and market penetration, I do remind myself of Keynes' view, which I quoted to you last quarter, in that there can be no sustainable recovery without natural improvements in aggregate end market demand. The question remains, where will it come from? First, some people will be wondering, have stimulus packages led to this improved performance? The short answer to that question is no. On stimulus packages, some countries seem to have done it well, like China, for example. Conversely, some, like the United States and the United Kingdom, have done it badly, and some, like Germany and Italy, have not really done anything at all. So as far as we can tell, as Pat said, while a lot of the money has been spent, very little stimulus money has yet bled into the US economy at large. The Cash for Clunkers program was successful at spurring short-term demand and driving down dealer inventories, but it did not seem to be very successful at improving underlying demand. Here and there, stimulus money may have replaced state spending that would otherwise have been cut, but there has been little or no net volume increase to speak of, so far as we can see. Perhaps more will bleed through later, but for now, it's not a big factor in the US demand equation for us. In contrast, we did see measurable impacts from stimulus money in China and to some degree in Japan. It was targeted mainly at locally made products in retail consumption, and the impact was almost immediate in its effect on demand for cars and electronics. That helped quite a bit locally, and China seems to be growing significantly again. I will go over this topic in more detail in our December update, but the key to the puzzle of what happens next year seems to be unemployment levels. There are many things to be cautious and worried about, but there have also been many positive things happening, and achieving a fully balanced view will be our task when we update you in December. So while significant economic challenges remain to be overcome by the economy, I think this is where our continued R&D spending comes in. We know instinctively that doing this will eventually make a difference, and ironically, the longer the recession goes on, the more advantage I think that we gain from it. Share gains should most certainly be possible and become a real growth differentiator for 3M, and we've already begun to step on the gas a bit more on R&D, as Pat mentioned earlier. As I told you last quarter, it's hard to forecast the precise shape of the recovery, and even harder to describe it verbally here on the phone. But our expectations are for a flattish but short economic bottom, then some fast restocking, of which you saw some in the third quarter. This would be followed by a flat spot, as I call it, or plateau, as end market demand and wholesale demand come into equilibrium. And after that, the earnings recovery will just gradually follow economic activity upwards. That flat spot, if it comes, may begin in the late fourth quarter, and it's what gives us the continued note of caution and conservatism. So in light of these realities, we're sticking with the fundamentals of the plan: control costs, generate cash, support our customers, and earn their business to drive sales, plus R&D. What the third quarter continues to emphasize is the underlying strength of the 3M business model, its diversity, combined with discipline, and how it provides a great platform for cash generation and performance, even in the most challenging conditions like we've seen. So we're going to maintain that discipline going forward, even as we make plans to selectively increase our growth investments in the fourth quarter and beyond. So with the third quarter complete, we now believe that organic sales volumes will continue to improve, and for the full year will come in between -9.5% and -10.5%, and that EPS will come in somewhere in the band of $4.50 and $4.55, both are material improvements versus our prior outlook. In conclusion, we're going to stay focused on cash generation and new investments in growth platforms as the best way for 3M to emerge an even stronger company than it was going into this recession. It's not too soon to remind ourselves that our ultimate objective is consistently higher growth, and we haven't deviated from that, and we're taking the necessary steps to make sure that it happens. Again, we are heartened by the power of our business model and by the professionalism and dedication of our people around the world, and we're more and more convinced than ever that 3M is a superior and profitable investment. And with that, I'd like to turn the call over to your questions. Thank you very much for listening, everyone.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up your headset before entering your request. Please limit your participation to one question and one follow-up. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Our first question will come from the line of Deane Dray with FBR Capital Markets.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Deane.
Good morning, Deane.
Hey, George, my first question was going to be to update us on the expected recovery path, but I think your closing remarks really honed right in on expectations there, and you've had a pretty hot hand. So I think that's, I won't pursue that further. I think that's pretty clear on your expectations. So instead, I'd like to focus a bit here on what you call the X factor and the respiratory mass. And just give us a sense, the last update was 40% of capacity being added. It looks like you've done a little bit more than that, but can you size for us the back order? And is there a risk in overexpansion here and chasing this demand? And might you consider licensing out the product? And just give a sense of how you're managing this this high-quality problem.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Dean. The capacity that we added was probably closer to 30% rather than 40. So that gives you kind of a sizing of where we've gone. As for the high quality problem of outsourcing, the practical matter is, Dean, is nobody has any capacity, so there's nobody to buy from. So the challenge at one level is not to disappoint big customers and very large and very powerful customers like governments. So we chose to make these relatively small incremental investments. And I do think that H1N1 may, of course, we could be proven wrong, but I think it may have changed people and government's attitude to these quite virulent viruses. So we don't think, because of what we spent, where we spend it, and how we structured it in sort of flexible, shutdownable capacity, that this will be a big challenge. And it is, of course, a chance, Dean, for us to gain market share, continued influence with our customers. So we think, on balance, it is the right thing to do.
And just to clarify, I know you don't break out margins by particular products, but just when you look at this incremental revenue coming through, how does this compare to the margins for the segment?
I would say, Dean, Pat here, it's similar. Every one of these tenders are different, okay, but on average, it's not all that all that different from the business as a whole.
Great, thank you.
Thanks, Dean.
Our next question will come from Shannon O'Callaghan with Barclays Capital. Please proceed.
Morning, guys.
Morning, Shannon.
George, just a question on how you're thinking about the trade-off between the margins and investments at this point. I mean, your focus has always been really more on ramping the investment, trying to accelerate the growth of the company. I mean, with the margins coming in as strong as they are, so you're ticking up R&D a little, which is nice to see. Why not put the pedal down a little more? And how are you thinking about that trade-off as you look out the next couple of years?
Well, it's always, the thing in life, Shannon, you know this, it's what we call here internally the baby bear strategy. It's not too hot, not too cold, not too soft, not too hard. We could certainly do what you suggest, but I think we always have to keep in mind the stability that we offer to our investors. So we will certainly tick up our investments next year, absolutely no question about it, we've already gone through our planning process, and we have lots of great ideas. And that's one of the really nice things that's really happened to us. If you go back not that many years, we had a lot of money and not maybe as many ideas as we have today. Now we have lots of ideas and plenty of capability. So I think that you'll be pleasantly surprised next year as we step on the gas to invest in a number of different places. In healthcare, we've talked about that in the past, but in industrial, in renewable energy, a lot of really, really good ideas are coming through, Shannon, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. But in the end, Pat and I will always try to find that sort of balance point so we don't bang the pendulum from one side to the other, because in the end, when you do that, you end up with inefficiencies, and we tend to take a view in our company of it's always better to have funding and R&D a little bit tight than a little bit loose, and that's probably the way that we will follow our pathway next year. But I think you can look forward with encouragement and anticipation to what we plan to do.
Okay, thanks. As you see the sequential volumes picking up here nicely, how are you thinking about overall employment at 3M? I mean, are in terms of increasing people's hours as a first step and then actually bringing people back, I mean, are you hitting that soon, or how do you think that plays out?
Well, I don't think we're past that, because we've got at least this year we do have some added capacity because we've had a lot of people on layoff, a lot of people have been on enforced vacations, so we still have some already good internal capacity to respond to those things. It's an excellent question, but it's why we manage the business in the way that we did. Rather than laying people off and then struggling with the recovery, We said, no, we need to do furloughs, we need to do mandatory vacations, those sorts of things, because there were bigger vacation accruals, and that's really, I think, helped us in preparing for the future. But there is another side to the question, and that is the quality of people that are available out there. And we certainly will step on the gas a little bit here in investing people that will help us with e-commerce, with some of the electronic products and software opportunities that are emerging. We will almost certainly, the plans are in construction right now, accelerate investments I won't be too specific, but you'll be able to figure them out very quickly, some overseas markets that provide big opportunities. But I think we're going to try to do it as best as we can without a lot of wholesale hiring, apart from the kind of cherry pickers charter that I think we've got from some great manufacturing industries in this country in particular. We'll do that. But we're going to try to do it steadily and without, again, banging the pendulum to the other side.
Our next question will come from Scott Davis with Morgan Stanley. Please proceed.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Good morning, Scott.
Hi, Scott.
It looks like you have several billion dollars of cash now on the balance sheet, which is kind of a high-class problem, I suppose. Any particular reason? I guess, can you give us some context on the size of the pension contribution that you're looking at for 4Q? And then two, when does it make sense? What's holding you back, I guess, from taking a look at share buybacks again? Is it just the uncertain market environment or potential acquisitions that you think you have out there that could potentially be a cash call in the next year?
Yeah, Scott, we kind of have a short memories, don't we? as to a year ago, we were kind of facing, kind of a concern about bank failures and everything else. So we're going to let a little bit of time here pass, but to answer your question on pensions, we're probably looking in the order of magnitude of $300 to $500 million in the fourth quarter is what we're looking at contributing at this stage, and of course we'll look at how the fourth quarter develops and where rates move and so forth, but that'd probably be the order of magnitude that we're looking at.
Okay. The second question, and I don't want to take away from other people who may have heard this correctly, but safety, security, and protection, it wasn't clear to me. It looks like if you do an apples-to-apples minus H1N1, that sales would have been down about 15%. Where were the weakest points there?
Well, the weakest, even within the, I'll call it the personal protection, that's related to industrial activity, that business is down. As we mentioned, corrosion protection, which is heavily driven really kind of by oil price. And, of course, now with oil prices kind of going up, that business may see a little bit of a rebound here. Industrial minerals was down a little bit. And, also our commercial, commercial care business was also, was also down. So, those are very industrial kind of related, economic related businesses. They were all down. And so as the overall economy improves across SSPS, we should see a gradual improvement in their growth rate outside of the H1N1 piece.
Our next question will come from Lawrence Alexander with Jefferies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to follow up on, you commented a few times on market share gains, and specifically for the auto aftermarket, but also more broadly, how much of a tailwind do you think you can get from market share gains in the early part of the cycle, and then how sustainable do you think that will be?
Lawrence, I think we've thought about it across the company. There's clearly going to be some better gains in some areas than others. China offers vast opportunities for share gains in automotive aftermarket, and that will be one of the investments that we make next year. I'm pretty sure about that. But overall, you try to assess, what can you really get on market share. I think it's possible to get in the 0.5 to 1 point of market share a year for the entire company. That would be the kind of target range that we would be thinking about. And, we've continued to spend on R&D, Lawrence. And we've maintained our investments. We've tried to make sure that we didn't run out of capacity where those opportunity lay. And you have to imagine if you're in our shoes now, it's time to make that pay. And that's basically the attitude that we're taking. And I think we are doing it. But as I mentioned on my remarks, it's quite difficult to make measurements of these things because in many industries, the data isn't there. So you end up making some kind of educated guesses. But it is going to be a push for us next year, Lawrence.
Then lastly, just briefly on pension, what's the end game? I mean, are you aiming to finally get the pension plans to the point where you can immunize them? Or is it just going to be sort of moving to sort of, you know, year by year, just to maintain within the statutory limit?
Well, of course, we have significant international plans, Lawrence, as well, so you have to kind of look at them on a plan-by-plan basis. Generally speaking, we like to keep in about a fully funded situation. If the opportunity ever arose, okay, they gave us the opportunity, okay, to immunize ourselves, okay, you know, that's something that we would strongly look at.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lawrence.
Our next question will come from Jeff Sprague with the City Investment Research. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Jeff. Good
morning. I just wonder if you could help us kind of piece together kind of the restructuring variances and, George, to some degree, this idea of the way you've managed cost out on the way down with vacation and furlough and things like that. I mean, the gist of my question is, you know, what kind of carryover benefit do we have, you know, into 2010 on the good old-fashioned restructuring versus maybe the, you know, the stuff that creeps back in on kind of undoing some of the more, you know, kind of near-term things kind of in the heat of the moment?
Hey, Jeff, I'll take a stab at this, Pat. On the vacation side, we've got about another year to go there. That's a 9 and 10, and then, of course, that the issue there will be what happens in 2011. And, you know, that runs order of magnitude $100 million in both 9 and 10, a little bit heavier maybe in 9. On a restructuring basis, based upon what we've launched and announced, we probably have something north of $100 million benefit going into 2010.
Right. And so just to be clear on the vacation, it's not an incremental 100 more in 2010. It just stays at kind of where we were.
Let me just, to be clear for everybody, when we went into the situation, you know, we had an accrual balance of about $200 million for earned vacation, okay, that had, you know, outside the current year. So effectively we'll be drawing that balance down over a two-year period. So it comes out about $100 million down in 9, another $100 million down in 10 is the way it works.
Okay. And Pat or George, can you give us a little more color on just the price environment overall? You know, it looks like you got that big Latin benefit you attributed to FX, but now we're going the other way on the real and other things. I don't know if there's other currencies we should be worrying about there. But I would assume that you're near kind of positive cost variances on a year-over-year basis. So just kind of tie together the price versus cost dynamic as we look, you know, forward the next couple quarters.
Yeah, sure, Jeff. First of all, to a large degree, most of our pricing will start to anniversary as we get into the fourth quarter. So our reported price will start to diminish. There still is some pricing going on in Latin American markets. You know, you bring up Brazil, but you know, Venezuela is also a very large, sizable business for us as well. So there still will be some positive price related to some currency moves. If you look at it, as George said in his comments, you know, on a longer term basis, we really try to, you know, kind of manage price cost spread. I think it'd be fair to say that in today's world, our teams have done a marvelous job on going after price, and input costs, as we mentioned, are probably down about 3% here in this quarter. So we've got a favorable gap there. But on a long-term basis, we really look at, you know, trying to manage those together. And if I really think about on a more going forward basis, I think from a planning assumption standpoint, generally you think of it being kind of a wash is the way that you would, you know, think of the model going forward.
I'm sorry, just if I could sneak one more in. Planning to put this pension contribution in Q4, if you tie that up with where your returns are now and what you're looking at on discount rate, can you give us some back of the envelope on pension headwind for next year?
Yes, I can. And again, I'll probably give you some more in December, Jeff, when we meet. And of course, we won't know the final answer until the year closes. But right now, if I had to kind of draw a kind of a snap a line, we're probably about $300 million of headwind next year, or 30 cents a share, and that's about $100 million more than we gave you last time we gave you a number, which I think was in the April time frame, and that's exclusively related to the change in the discount rate.
Yeah.
You know, interest rates have, you know, at least corporate rates have, you know, come down pretty significantly. So it's really on the discount rate side is where that movement has occurred. It's not really been on the return side.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Our next question will come from John Inch with Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, John. Good
morning, guys. Hey, so other than optical, were there any of your businesses sort of as the quarter progressed or segments or whatever facing price pressures that incrementally got worse and any incrementally facing price benefits? I'm just sort of trying to think of the mix between all your various moving parts here.
Yeah, John, I would say that nothing significant to call out.
So, George, when you talk about market share gains, are there obvious areas? I mean, obviously, you've got a lot of new products in the pipeline that you're launching, but are there segments or areas as we've looked back over the course of the recession where you feel you've made meaningfully significant inroads with respect to share gains?
Well, I think there are two immediately come to mind, John. Obviously, the respirators, we've done extraordinarily well, but we did add capacity early. We were able to capitalize on those investments, in particular, you know, the plant that we built in Korea. We were ahead of the game there. The extensions in the UK, and now these new ones that I just talked about. So I think in that area, John, we will have done well. In the optical area, I don't think there's any doubt either there, because we see the reported attachment rates that we have in those businesses, and those are picking back up again quite substantially. So we're clearly gaining share in that area. In the renewables energy, John, where that business is still small, you know, stamp of our footprint is getting put down there. We're building a new plant in Singapore for films for that business, and as soon as that capacity comes on stream, we'll be able to gain share there as well. We obviously gain share partly through acquisitions in the automotive aftermarket. So I think those things will continue, John. We have some marvelous products in abrasives. If we see you in December, we'll try to bring along some either good graphics or maybe even movies. You know, you'd think that it was not possible to ever make any more innovations in abrasives, but it just and we shouldn't take people's time on the call to give you the details, but absolutely marvelous. So I think in a fairly broad front, John, we're going to be able to gain share. You know, you've always got to be careful not to be too optimistic about how you can gain it, because other people have to give it up, and they don't always do that willingly. But I think we're going to do well on share gain because of the investments in innovation, and they certainly lift it, and in some cases, the investments in capacity. So I think we can continue down that pathway fairly strongly, John.
John,
the other thing, and I won't give you exactly specifics, yeah. I'll give you more of a general comment. The other thing that's happened, of course, is with the economic conditions, there are a number of suppliers who are not the healthiest today. And a lot of large multinationals have re-reviewed their supply base during these kind of times. And you know, so we spent a lot of time with big customers during these kind of times. It doesn't show out in results today. But I think as business returns, I think we're going to see that we will be treated, okay, I think with some additional volume, just because they know one is we're going to be around, okay, and two, obviously, we our innovation capability. So I think we will pick up some as the economy returns here.
Just one more. On healthcare, with the U.S. going through this big debate, can you guys remind us how much of your healthcare business runs through U.S. hospitals? And is that business not going to be subject to some form of managed pricing pressure over the course of the coming years?
Well, John, let me try to answer it maybe a little bit different. Maybe the guys can see if they can figure out, you know, what the hospital number is. But here's how I think of that business. About half of it's in the U.S., and there's certain elements of that business that, to some degree, may actually benefit a little bit, okay, from some of the efforts. You know, take our health information systems business.
Yeah.
They may actually benefit. So, you know, as we've looked at the various rounds of debate that's going on around healthcare, of course, we don't necessarily like, you know, any kind of, I'll call it, taxation that's put on the healthcare industry, but what we're looking at under the various scenarios right now is something that we think is, you know, it's kind of a manageable expense for us. There's a piece that, you know, will be on the medical side. There could be a piece that, you know, leaks over into the oral care side, okay, as well. But as we've thought about it and looked at it, you know, of course, none of us like to have any kind of, you know, I'll call it penalty. But the reality is, we think within the size of our business, it's a pretty manageable thing at this point in time.
Thanks, John.
Our next question will come from David Begleiter with Deutsche Bank.
David, are you there?
David, your line is open.
Why don't we go on? We'll come back to Dave right after.
Our next question will come from Stephen Winoker with Sanford Bernstein.
Good morning.
Morning, Steve.
Just a quick question on CapEx first. It's down 37% roughly year on year, and cash from ops is up 15%. And historical rates, is, you know, I've got around $1.5 billion, depending on which year on a full year basis. So how are you thinking about pushing the accelerator down on that part of the equation?
Can I? I'll start, okay, and then George, we're kind of debating, okay, where this is kind of end up.
He's got a big smile on his face, Steve.
And part of it, Steve, obviously, what we're trying to judge is, as George talked about, we've just kind of completed our planning process, and there are some really good ideas inside the company. So we're trying to, you know, settle down on that number. As I would have probably told you a quarter ago, I would have probably said that number was going to be kind of flat, okay? Which I still think it's going to be flat to maybe up a little bit is how I'd put it, Steve.
We've got a lot of these. The big projects are kind of coming to completion. So the carryover from 08 into 09 would have been much bigger than the carryover from 09 into 2010. So even though it sounds, when Pat says they're flat to a little bit up, in point of fact, there's significant new elbow room has been created by the completion of earlier products in that roughly, you know, 900 million or so that we'll spend this year. So it is going to create some capacity chances for us. And then obviously what Pat and I will do is are doing as we speak with David's help, going over each of these projects, the most important ones, the ones with seemingly the best returns, or the ones that have the greatest strategic capability, and probably we'll end up allocating a little bit more to those, tempered to some degree by some strong demand in one or two areas like respirators, like optical films, that will again color that mix. But I think overall it will give us a little bit of elbow room, more than we had last year, to start now allocating some of that money to growth, and we may top it up with just a little bit to make sure that we're not leaving any really good opportunities on the table.
But you're basically looking, therefore, at CapEx. These run rates are closer to normalized little bit better than these than what you used to run historically as you were going through all the major capacity changes and supply chain efforts.
Yes, we've still got some of those things to complete, Steve. But I think that if you think of it, you know, the normal run rate within $100 million plus or minus where we are today, I think you'll probably find that that's how we'll run for some time.
And just a business unit question, a consumer and office. So organic local currency sales were down, from what I can tell, 7.5% versus 4.3% in the second and 3% in the first. It's the only business unit where I saw organic local currency sales fall before acquisitions and currency. Can you once again just clarify a little bit what that
is? Yes, Steve, and maybe this will answer part of your question. If you recall, on the second quarter call, and I tried to remind everybody this time, is that there was a little bit of movement in back-to-school shipments that went in the second quarter, okay, that normally was in the third quarter, and it's about 2 points of growth. So the second quarter actually benefited by about 2 points of growth that normally was a third quarter activity. So if you kind of move 2 points of growth between Q2 and Q3, I think you get back to something I think that's more of a normal trend.
Okay. And then the last question is sort of another spin on the pricing and margin questions that have been asked three times, which is when I look over 40 years of gross margins and operating margins, the peak margins that I can find are sort of 51 and 25% respectively, and you're pretty much, you know, just about there now. So as you think about all of these investments and changes and drivers in organic growth, is there a new level that you're driving towards as you think about it in terms of sustaining? You talked about pricing. You talked about the cost cuts that you're doing. How are you guys kind of debating and thinking about that, looking over a little longer term?
Hey, Steve, our margins really, we don't have a strategy, okay, that says that our margins ought to be X, and then we kind of drive everything off of that. This is kind of an outcome, okay, of all the individual pieces that we put in place and, you know, the great work of the business. And I do think that 3M has a very, very unique business model and capability, which is the reason why these margins are so high and so sustainable. And we'll talk to you some more about that in the December meeting, when we think of it. But, I mean, the reality is we've improved our business. And in kind of your observation is we've improved our business to the point where, of course, our peak margins are now better than they have historically been. And, of course, you look at history and, you know, we've been in different businesses at different times, so it's never really the same company. But the reality is we have done that, which actually provides a great platform for George and I to think about, you know, where do you grow, okay? There's a lot of good opportunities we have to grow, you know, grow the business. And with the incremental margins we have in many, many cases, any growth we get just actually makes the results better, you know, better when you drive growth. So, and even with, you know, the acquisitions we've made and some of the strategies we've made on going further down the pyramid and so forth, we've been able to kind of hold our margin structure together with it, which I think shows the power of the underlying capability of the company. So we will continue to drive growth. If you really look at, obviously, how do we drive shareholder value in this company, it really is getting more top line growth. It's not by squeezing, you know, more margin, you know, margin out of it.
So we'd be happy if these margins stayed reasonably in this band and the leverage that we do, the operating leverage we get, Steve, we can just use that as fuel to stoke the growth fire. That's the kind of the way that we're thinking about this. And we've done quite a bit in this particular recession. We've done quite a bit of insourcing stuff that actually, historically we outsourced. Maybe we outsourced it 10 years ago. It seemed to have a good value proposition at that time. Now doesn't make sense. And we're bringing that stuff back inside. I think maybe $150 million of sales this year or so. We're bringing that inside and getting it better prices. So all of that's helping to leverage our gross margin and actually shorten our supply chains as well. So there seems to be an awful lot more juice in this lemon that we can use. But our intention is to use that juice to fund more growth, not necessarily fund more margin.
One other thing I guess I'd like to maybe point out is also if you, and I know your question was really a kind of on an operating margin basis, but I don't want you to lose the reality that we've also been able to significantly get our tax rate down as well. So if you look at it on a net margin basis, we've been able to make some very good strides, okay, on our tax rate over time as well. So when you look at it on a net basis, and then the other thing that we didn't talk about, but the other thing that is sacred to us is really looking at our overall ROIC as well. So you know we've got some objectives that make sure that our returns remain, you know, in the 20% plus category. So it's both margins and return is what we focus on.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from John Roberts with Buckingham Research.
Morning, guys.
Morning, John.
When you look below the aggregate sales at the individual customer order patterns, have they firmed up in terms of frequency, in terms of average order size, things like that to give you a little bit more confidence and predictability than you had earlier?
I would say on the margin, okay, you know, maybe it's slightly better, but I can't say we're not back, okay, to where, you know, where we were a couple of years ago from a, you know, kind of a demand planning standpoint. You know,
I'm not talking about the aggregate numbers. I think before that you had less confidence because they were coming in infrequent basis and smaller amounts.
I wouldn't say it has. Anytime you start back up, okay, I think it starts to improve. But I still think it would be fair to say that we are seeing smaller orders, okay, than we used to see, okay, and they're, you know, kind of in the more sporadic, you know, sporadic nature. I do think customers will continue to be very cash flow conscious as they recover here. So I think that's going to have an impact in, you know, supply chains really across all industries, okay, as this thing recovers, is I think there's just going to be a little bit more of a hand-to-mouth, you know, view for a while here.
I mean, they're going to be more cautious, John. You'd expect people to be more cautious, and they may or may not be restricted by credit, but both of those factors, if they're real, will come together in probably the point that you just asked, which is probably for a time here, we'll have more small orders, more frequent small orders, but we've done well in responding to that, and hopefully that settles down and accelerates to return to more, shall we say, more normal ordering patterns as volume builds. Let's hope that's the case.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Steve Tusa with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, good morning.
Morning, Steve.
Morning, Steve.
So just the commodity cost benefit, I'm not sure if you guys gave that number. Sorry if I missed it.
Well, in the third quarter, we said that our input cost was down about 3%.
Okay. When I look at the guidance, just trying to kind of get my hands around the seasonality here. So when you look at the fourth quarter EPS at the high end, looks like, you know, it's going to be about 26% of the annual number. And when you look at the implied margins at the high end of around, I don't know, 20.5%, you know, that's down more than your kind of normal 150 bips decline from, you know, 3Q to 4Q. And just jumping back quickly to that EPS comment, you know, with 26% of the year in the fourth quarter, that's kind of normal seasonality, but that would seem, you know, relatively conservative to me in the context of how this year has played out, given that, you know, 1Q was you know, so horrible, and it looks like you still have a lot of these tailwinds going for you in 3Q and 4Q. So I guess the bottom line is, you know, can you just maybe discuss the seasonality dynamics here in the third and the fourth quarter? It doesn't seem to me like it should be normal, or maybe there are reasons why it should, if you could just talk about that.
Steve, I'm surprised this waited till the last
call.
Okay, last question to come up. It's an interesting question.
I can't help that.
No, that's fine. You could. I guess you know your observation's true. If you look at our top line guidance, though, I guess if you kind of do the math, I think you'd probably see that we've probably taken our top line expectation probably down a little bit from our normal seasonality, And to be honest with you, that's a little bit of a just a plan around. We don't know what's going to exactly transpire. I feel pretty good about October. The wild card for me is December. I really don't exactly know how December is going to play out. December could either continue on on kind of a steady trend basis here, or it could be a complete collapse. So we've kind of obviously probably hedged our bets a little bit when we've looked at our fourth quarter expectations there. So don't read anything more to it than just maybe a hesitation we've got into trying to operate in a kind of an uncertain world here. Yeah, I just don't know where really December is going to fall out. But if I look at our margins probably for fourth quarter, they will come down off the third quarter. They won't be, at least to my expectations, in the 20s. Okay, they'll probably be in maybe 22 or so. Steve, is the way I think of it.
Okay, so you're basically, if there's normal seasonality, there's upside to the range, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I would say there probably is, Steve.
What it will also do, Steve, that's the other thing we're trying to keep some flexibility open here, is depending on how the fourth quarter goes and how the Christmas season goes, doing it the way that Pat has suggested it will allow us to have a little bit of money in the back pocket to drive some increased ad merch if we so wish on some other R&D programs. It looks like we might be able to pull ahead. So it'll give us that flexibility if we so wish, based within the numbers that we've told you.
And then, just a question for the H1N1 stuff. Is there any way to give us what a bottom line impact is? I mean, how far? And if you're not comfortable doing that, are these above or below average margins?
Steve, I would think of it, from a modeling standpoint, just put them in at average incremental margins, okay? Because, and I'm thinking really, you almost look at to think of it more from a gross margin perspective, Steve. There's not much infrastructure cost, at least SG&A cost or R&D cost required, okay, to sell these additional masks. So it's more of a incremental gross margin business. But to some degree, some of the tenders are very, very competitive, okay. So to some degree, you have to discount a little bit off of that. So if you were to kind of bracket it someplace between a normal operating margin and a gross margin, would be kind of a decent way to think of it.
That's a good range. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Steve. So we lost Dave.
That concludes the question and answer portion of our conference. At this time, we will turn the call back over to 3M for some closing remarks.
Well, thank you very much, everyone. We appreciate very much the time that you spend with us, especially in these busy times. So thank you very much, and we look forward to seeing you and talking to you in at the beginning of December. Thanks a lot, everyone.